Chapter 15. The Marginals. Ship bells rang, and then a siren sounded, alerting every soul on board to the imminent translation. A judder, a shake that rattled the bones of the ship, and they spat free and clear into real space. New sirens blasted, and a synthetic voice repeated the words, "Hostile zone, war footing," over the speaker system. Spica had brought them to the target 3 days early. "We're decelerating into the Rimworld marginals," Spica told Gaunt and Edwine. "Navigation has confirmed our real space position and vector. 16 hours of deceleration into the gravimetric plane of this junk system, and then another 5 as we close on the target location. From this point, we are running battle ready and shields lit. This is a Vox silent phase. I suggest you begin final preparation. You should be ready to deploy from 3 hours out." "I'll make that 5, said Gaunt. Spica nodded. "I will issue half-early notices to that point," he said. "What does it look like?" Gaunt asked. Beside him, the space marine chuckled, as if the question was an idle whim. Spica raised his eyebrows and called out to a deck officer. The real space shutters covering the massive bridge ports rumbled open, and weak yellow light spilled in. There was nothing to see except a murky brown haze with a small bloom of light in its lower right corner, like a lens flare. White speckles like grains of salt or flakes of snow glittered past them, moving sternwards. A dingy emptiness where the frail available light looked like it was coloured with urine.
"You see?"
asked Edwine. "I see nothing," Gaunt replied.
"My point precisely,"
the silver guard rasped, amused. Spica reached out and adjusted some dials in his console. He barked another instruction or two to the observation and resolution officers at the sculptural cogitator stands below him. A large, gridded subframe extended from the port sill to cover the bulk of the window space. It was made of thick armour glass and inlaid with hololithic sensors and actuators. The frame was thick with armoured trunking and clusters of small repeater screens and secondary monitors. It lit, igniting a graphic overlay of luminous green across its grid, which quickly began to section and analyse. Bands of colour-coded sensory data spiked up the edges of the main grid and across the repeater screens. Columns of text data played out. Spica fine-tuned his controls, centred the main green crosshairs on the bloom of light, and began to enhance and magnify the area until the hololithic picked image filled the grid and blocked out the real view. There was a little more detail. Magnified, the white bloom was a tangle of solids, rendered white by the reflected glare of the local star. It was still blurry and fuzzy, but Gaunt could see enough to tell it wasn't a planetoid. There was no regular geometric form. It was like a knot, and skirts of tangled matter trailed out of it to a great distance, like the broken ring of a gas giant. The snow effect was more intense on this image. There was a density of moving white specks, almost like static. The image resembled some pallid, flaking, submerged thing viewed underwater that was thick with sediment and microorganisms.
"That," said Spica, "is Salvation's Reach."
The space marine seemed slightly interested.
"The specks?" asked Gaunt. "Is that interference?"
"Debris," Spica replied, shaking his head. "The debris field is exceptionally dense, and will go denser the closer we get to the target. Our shields will bear a lot of it, but there will be manoeuvring, and that will degrade our approach time."
"Making us more vulnerable," said Edwine.
Spica shrugged.
"We will be visible for longer, yes," he agreed. "But the debris belt will also disguise us. If I do my job right, we can approach the main location and will appear to be nothing more or less than another lump of tumbling junk."
"As we proceed from here," said Gaunt, "I'll need eyes on this."
"Why?"
asked Edwine.
"I have operational command, Brother Sergeant. As we progress with this raid, I want to be aware of all the information possible, interior and exterior. If the shipmaster identifies a threat, I don't want to know about it later on.
You'll see it for yourself, said Edwine. The stratagem will afford you quite enough.
I'm sorry, said Gaunt. You seem to be labouring under the misapprehension that I will be on the bridge during the attack. Of course, said Spiker. Commanding the operation. I have a place prepared for you. Where else would you be?
I will be leading Beta Strike from the front.
You? You're going in? Asked Spiker.
Edwine made a sound that approximated laughter.
That has always been my practice, said Gaunt. I will not send men in to do something I'm not prepared to do myself.
No wonder Vigum liked you, said the Space Marine. There is a spot for you on Alpha Strike, at my side.
Appreciate it, but you know your business, and I know mine. Major Kalia and Major Baskerville will lead the regiment with you at Alpha.
And Gamma Strike?
Asked Edwine. Major Petrushevskaya and Captain Dower, said Gaunt.
He turned in his seat and pointed across the upper bridge area to the Tanith trooper waiting beside the main access hatch.
That's my adjutant, Beltane. I want him in my place here at the Strategium with access to your Vox system.
My Vox heralds can communicate all data between us, said Spiker.
I've no doubt, but I require you to allow Beltane's presence. If he translates an order to you from me, it carries my full authority.
I understand, said Spiker.
You should also have your armsmen stand ready, said Gaunt.
Spiker frowned.
Very well. For a boarding action? Yes, but also for counterboarding. We will be opening channels into that target. That means if things go wrong, they can get at us.
Gaunt rose. The other two got up.
Let us prepare, said Gaunt.
Spiker made the sign of the Aquila.
The Emperor protects, rumbled Edwine.
Gaunt walked off the bridge, Beltane coming after him.
You'll set up in there, said Gaunt. He's not the most accommodating person in the Imperium, but I've made it clear he has to cooperate. You have access, you relay everything. If he tries to fence you out, let me know and put me on speaker.
Beltane nodded.
Major Ron and Major Kalia said to let you know that preparations began, sir, he said. We're arming up, and the assault vehicles are being serviced in the through-deck hangars ready for loading. There's this to approve and sign.
He handed Gaunt a data slate. Gaunt read it as he walked.
Well, that's something to cherish, he said, authorising the document with a press of his biometric signet ring.
Captain Dower wonders, Beltane began.
We'll make time for it, said Gaunt.
Commissar Hark wants a word.
I see him, said Gaunt. Hark was waiting for them at the entrance to the spinal hallway.
What is it, Victor?
Gaunt asked.
We've uncovered a disgrace, said Hark. He had taken Gaunt to his quarters, where Lud, Fezekiel, and Rowan were waiting. It was quiet and private. The room was painstakingly neat and ordered, exactly the preserve one might expect of a man like Victor Hark.
I hesitate to use the word scam, said Hark, because that really doesn't adequately express how monstrous this is. It's an ingenious, fraudulent scheme. I've no idea how long it's been running. Possibly since before I joined the regiment. Possibly since the founding.
Gaunt read his way across the paperwork that Hark and Fezekiel had spread out across the desk. Some of it was torn or very old. Several pieces were fresh print-out copies from archive sources. His jaw clenched.
We only stumbled across it by accident, said Hark. Credit where credit's due, Luna found it. It's so insidious, it was nigh on invisible.
What are we looking at? Gaunt asked, still studying the various documents.
As far as we can tell, said Fezekiel,
There are three main areas of fraud, but there is significant overlap. First of all, there are fraudulent claims for widows' benefit for women that don't exist.
They are all vituity allowances filled out in the names of dead troopers, said Hark.
In other words, fictional wives were being created and paperwork retroactively completed so that claims could be made on the names of deceased troopers, said Fezekiel. But there are also vituity claims being made in the names of real wives and partners who are long dead, women who died with Tanith or on Vergast. Finally, there are real women, unmarried, like Elodie Dutana, whose identities are being used as spousal signatories. Better than an invented name, you see.
The individual vituity payments are minimal, said Hark. But together, and in such numbers, and over such a length of time...
He stopped and rubbed the bridge of his nose, eyes closed.
Someone is generating a significant income stream, he said. They are defrauding the Munitorum. It's quite possible that the Munitorum is already aware of the fraud, but it could take years or decades before an investigation catches up with the perpetrators.
That's probably what they're counting on, said Roan.
Someone is making money out of the regiment's dead, said Hark. From those fallen in combat and from the civilian casualties. It's desecration. It's monstrous. Stealing from corpses, robbing from graves.
Do we know who's behind this? Asked Gaunt. His face was white with rage.
We're not yet sure how the money's being claimed, said Fezekiel, or where the payments are put, once they have been. They could be getting washed clean through the regimental account somehow. That would require collusion from low-grade Munitorum staffers. They could be getting laundered through gambling dens and the black market during shore leave.
They could be stuffed in a musette bag under a court, said Roan.
We've got one name, said Hark. Costin. That little bastard, Gaunt murmured.
He is definitely involved, said Fezekiel, but Hark and I don't think he could have done this on his own. We suspect he has co-conspirators, and one of them might be quite senior.
It'd be hard to run this without a friendly officer to sign off the occasional card or petition, said Ludd.
Years ago, said Gaunt, I nearly executed Costin.
Ixie Cardinal, Roan nodded.
Drunkard, idiot, Gaunt hissed. He got men killed, most of Raglan's platoon. I showed him mercy instead, damn him.
We have a number of reports of Costin being conspicuously wealthy, said Fezekiel. Off duty, he's always got money for good drink, good food, money to gamble. He gets his hands on better Amasek than the senior staff.
He didn't do this alone, said Gaunt. Who does he associate with?
Gendler, said Hark.
Merrin, said Roan.
But we've nothing on either of them, said Fezekiel. Costin's the only one with ink on his hands, and even then it's circumstantial. We haven't interviewed. We haven't interrogated.
No interviews. I want to give the order for punishment execution, said Gaunt.
Ludd didn't think he'd ever seen such bitten-back fury in Gaunt before.
I don't want to execute our only lead, said Hark, even to make an example of him. And do we want that kind of example a few hours before a raid? Asked Fezekiel.
He's not walking away from this, said Gaunt. Nobody involved in this is going to escape punishment.
I'm not suggesting they should, said Hark, but I think we should make a move after the raid. If we execute Costin or this comes out, it could destroy morale.
The only reason for keeping that little ghoul alive, said Roan quietly, is to crack him.
With your permission, I'll get the truth out of him. Hark and Gaunt exchanged glances.
It's the best way, said Roan, seeing as this was all my idea.
He glanced up, scornful of the horror on their faces.
Relax, he said. I didn't do it. But the idea was mine.
Years ago, just after we left Tanith behind, I remember getting drunk with Corbeck and Larkin one night, joking how we could make a killing from the dead. It became a regular gag, how we could compensate ourselves for having such a fething shit existence by claiming for the lives lost in Tanith. In time, it turned into a standing sick joke, gallows humour. Never thought anyone would be so twisted they'd actually try it. I don't think anyone even thought I was capable, and that's saying something. Gaunt took his cap off and combed his hair back with his fingers. "Do it," he told Ron. "Whatever it is you do, I want to know who Costin's in bed with. Do you want to salute the other way, or would you like our help holding him down?" Ron shook his head. "I can do it. I could put the fear of throne in him and make him give up his confederates. And you won't have to look the other way. I'm not even going to touch him. It'll just take a word in his ear. Well, two words, actually." "I won't ask what they are," said Fezekiel. Gaunt picked up one of the documents from the table. "The only reason I spared Costin on Aixi Cardinal was because Dawdon pleaded with me," he said. He showed Ron the paper. It was a vituity form filled out to benefit Dawdon's long-dead wife on Tanith. They were 6 hours out. Ship bells rang to mark the half-hour. For the last 2 hours, there had been a regular series of thudding, tapping sounds. Debris from the immense Salvation's Reach junk belt was growing so thick it was bouncing off the Armaduke's shields. The regiment was almost battle-ready. There was a tension in the air like an electrical charge. Gaunt summoned the entire strength to the main excursion deck and ordered the retinue in too. There was no formal order, no regularised ranks or echelons. The regimental assembly simply stood in a group facing Gaunt. All the ghosts had stopped their preparation work to attend. Some had only half kit, or their hands were dark with gun grease. The women and children gathered in around the crowded deck. Gaunt saw Tona with Dalin and the little girl. Kurth and Colding arrived from the infirmary with Dawdon. The old man, his skin the colour of ash, insisted on walking. "You should be resting," Gaunt said. "What for?" asked Dawdon. "I still think," Dawdon shook his head. "Anna has administered a very strong opiate, Ibrahim," he said. "I find I can get out of bed and walk about. I'm not going to miss this. In fact, I have no intention of missing anything from now until I'm done." "I could order you to your bed," said Gaunt. "And I could disobey you," replied Dawdon. "What would you do then? Shoot me?" Gaunt laughed. Kurth and Colding were both trying not to smile, though Gaunt could tell that Kurth was simultaneously riven with sadness. "I just want to say," Gaunt began.
"If it's goodbye," said Dawdon, "I don't want to hear it."
Some of the ship's crew, including several senior bridge officers, were attending the assembly too. Gaunt was about to clamber up onto a loading platform to address the crowd when the Space Marines arrived. There was a hush. The three figures plodded into the hangar and across the deck like ogres, the crowd parting to let them through. The Space Marines had donned specialist armour that had been transferred aboard during the conjunction. Ancient, ornate suits of boarding armour, precious relics from the most ancient times. Each suit of plate was decorated in the bearer's chapter colours. They were the engraved, polished works of master artificers, worn and gleaming, massively layered and reinforced for defence, Gothic, crested and shivering with purity seals. Each warrior carried a huge boarding shield in the form of a half aquila. Holofernes carried a long power spear in the other hand, Edwine a chainsword. Saraf's huge right hand was free for his bolt gun. Their helms had visors like portcullis gates. They took up positions in front of Gaunt. Holofernes held his spear horizontally at thigh level. Gaunt nodded to them.
and then looked at the body of the regiment. The double-headed cyber eagle shuffled and fluttered on its nearby perch. Gaunt made a short address, just a few words. It didn't need much. They were ready. They had been waiting since Jago for a real fight, and now it was upon them. When he was done, he made way for Zweel. The Ayatani led the assembly in a blessing and commendation. Just for once, Zweel was restrained and wandered off topic barely at all. At the end of Zweel's blessing, Gaunt nodded to Dower and Elodie, and they came to the front. Gaunt read the petition, and the marriage oath was sworn with the regiment as witnesses. "The Emperor protects," Gaunt told the couple. He looked up at the assembly again and repeated the words. The regiment cheered and clapped the union. Gaunt looked at Wilder. "Captain, please." The bandsmen weren't in ceremonial rig. They were dressed in duty uniforms for combat, but they had brought their instruments. At Wilder's command, they struck up a beloved battle hymn of the Imperium. Dower and Elodie moved together through the crowd, receiving congratulations. When they came to Captain Zukova, Elodie said, "I'm sorry."
"What for?" Zukova asked, genuinely puzzled. "Never mind," said Dower.
Gaunt found Sar Aff talking to Dordan. The old medicae looked especially fragile beside the vast space marine in his heavy boarding armour.
"He is dying," Sar Aff said to Gaunt, as though this was news and had just come up in the conversation.
"I know," said Gaunt.
"But he is not afraid," said Sar Aff.
"I'm not," Dordan said.
The white scar nodded sagely. He looked at Gaunt.
"And they shall know no fear," he said.
The band was still playing as the crowd began to disperse. Guardsmen said their farewells to members of the support and retinue and hurried off to finish their preparations. Captain Dower said goodbye to his new wife with a last kiss. Ezra walked into the open centre of the chamber, held up his arm, and the eagle obediently swooped to perch on his wrist. Carrying it as if he were a falconer, he walked out of the hangar at the heels of the scouts and the space marines. Near one of the exits in the bustle of the crowd, Rowan put out his hand and drew Costin to one side.
"Who can I help you, sir?" Costin asked.
"They know," said Rowan.
"What?"
Rowan nodded across the chamber at Gaunt, who was talking with Hark and Lud.
"They know," he repeated, his eyes hooded, a wicked smile on his face.
Costin blinked. He started to tremble.
What do you mean? What the faith are you talking about? They know what? What do they know?"
Rowan's grin broadened.
"They know," he repeated.
He turned and walked away, leaving Costin gazing after him, wide-eyed.